We're opening the hearing on House Bill 3198.
Which representative who is here?
Yep.
Who is here?
Marjorie Sherman.
I didn't hear what number you called. I'm sorry.
Right, this is House Bill 3198. I think it's the next one up. Let me make sure. It isn't.
You want to do it?
Let me start over again. I'm a little rattled. I promised the subcommittee chair that we would get started 5 minutes ago. So we will start in order with the bills the way they're listed, with 3025.
You're doing fine.
Are you here, Representative Hooley, on this bill, 3025?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
I'd like to bring some representatives.
Sure.
Can I miss you up to mine?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Darlene Hooley, State Representative from District 27. House Bill 3025 is introduced at a request of several people that live in my district, and it really is an attempt, and I don't know if we succeeded, but an attempt to tighten up criteria by which non-parents may file in the courts in custody, placement, visitation, and guardianship matters. Last session, House Bill 2460 seemed like a good idea, and I did vote for it. Why not allow interested persons other than parents to petition the courts in these matters of custody, placement, visitation, and guardianship? Certainly, there could be no harm in providing a mechanism by which persons who have established a relationship with a child to be heard in the courts concerning that child. However, we soon found out that, like a lot of things that you try to do to make a system better, has some adverse effects. And the adverse effects were such that I think the parenting function may be too broadly defined, and that it's being used to harass custodial parents, and many times not in the best interest of the child. And my concern today, frankly, is the child. I have with me written testimony from two of my constituents expressing their concerns on the current law, and would like to introduce with me today Primus St. John, who will give you his experience with the law that we passed last session, and hope that maybe we can, we've gone too far one direction, we can sort of move back to the middle. And with that, Mr. Primus, John.
What is it that you'd like to know? Is there something specific you'd like to know? Would you just like me to relate my case?
Why don't you explain what happened to you?
Okay.
You need to give your name for the record first.
Okay. My name is Primus St. John. My case is this. For about maybe four and a half years, I was living with a woman who I was not married to. I have custody of my two children from an earlier marriage. And at a certain point in the relationship that I was in, I decided to terminate that relationship, and I was going away on sabbatical with my children. The issue simply is this: the woman that I was involved with, taking advantage of this bill, is petitioning for visitation. The children's mother also lives here. Now, what's interesting about the children's mother's case is, for a number of years, it appears she was having problems with schizophrenia, and in the process of that has been in remission since about February of 1985. She has an existing visitation schedule. One of the things that happened was the law allows the woman who I was involved with to petition. And one of the things that she did was to petition for just about everything that was not written down. So whereas the biological mother has every other weekend, This woman was petitioning for 2 months in the summertime, holidays, the children's birthday. In essence, one of the things that happens is she was petitioning for a visitation right in excess of the mother's by at least 3 to 1. She wanted to sit down and talk about the cases in Clackamas County District Court, and she wanted to negotiate it. I will not sit down to negotiate any kind of visitation schedule which does that to the children's biological mother, whether or not her schizophrenia is in remission or not. And in addition to that fact, one of the things that also happened is the children do not want the visitation. The oldest child and she have absolutely no speaking terms, and the youngest child was with her on speaking terms roughly until about December of 1985. This woman has come into my a number of apartments that I had because I went away on sabbatical and rented my house, came home 6 months earlier, came into the apartments, demanded to have her children. I had to call the police on her on 3 different occasions. I even had to have her removed from the premises, and is basically arguing these are her children. It seems to me it's a very, very strange case, and it's a strange case that is fueled by what I regard as an irresponsible element of the law that is passed. One of the things that concerns me is, look, when you start a law with anybody, you know, what does it do to my parental prerogative? You know, it seems to me that biological parents who are competent have a parental prerogative. And I think this law isn't looking at what I feel is a philosophical issue, that that prerogative really does mean something. Are we saying that if a parent goes into a relationship with their children, they therefore have to dismiss, what they're doing is they have to give up their children? Do their children, there are certain rights that they no longer have. The bill says after a 2-year period. And this, I don't understand that. I really don't understand that. It seems to me that there is a tradition of intervention on the behalf of children if they are in danger. Not if they are in agreement with people, but if they're in danger. My children, I think there's some very interesting things about this. I've heard reports about arguments about the continuity of care and things like that. One of the things that's very fascinating about my case is, number one, my children have been flourishing in the absence of this loving, caring, sharing person. What does that really mean? If I spend an hour with your children, if I give your child an aspirin, if I read your child a book, if I help your child with a mathematical problem as an adult, I have been loving, caring, and sharing. I think if you're really going to talk in those terms, you have a really rather strange situation. Anyone, any adult who is loving towards a child fits in that description of parenthood that you have there. Anyone, just read it. Caring. What does caring and sharing mean? It really seems to me a kind of tour de force in pop psychology. I also noticed when I was looking at some of the proceedings, there is no involvement of academic psychologists in this issue. This is an extremely important issue in which you are dealing with the parental prerogative of people in the United States of America, and I don't see any really serious effort to deal with that. It also seems to be very, very, very complicated. And I'm really basically kind of disturbed by that. Look at the kinds of situations you set up. If theoretically, if you send your child down to Eugene to be in the Oregon Academy of Gymnastics for a period of 3 years, those people, on the basis of daily contact and loving and caring and sharing, can say, look, I want permanence with that relationship. I need that. It is my feeling. And this law says that they have that. At least they can go before a court. In addition to that fact, my children have to go through a lot of emotional stuff. There were numerous. This thing began in 1985. The woman kept petitions and motions before the court until December of 1986. Withdrew. drew everything, and in Christmas of 1986, she again puts in a new petition, so the children have to go through this again. In the last set of court proceedings, one of the things that I find very interesting is also it seems to me there is a new bill that's arguing very vigorously for temporary custody of child under this section, and I think that's kind of interesting, because in our first round, one of the things that happened was this woman claimed that the law 2046 gave her the rights of the wife, and therefore she could ask for temporary custody while this issue was being decided. And the judge at the circuit court who was presiding on that case dismissed that. I think again, you have another intrusion into a parental prerogative, and and you're telling parents, you know, you just do not have certain rights. Another thing I think might be argued is how do you prove time spent with children? You can play certain games. If I put in 10 hours with a child and you put in 5 hours in the child, what you will tell me is because you put in 5 hours to my 10 hours, you put in quality time. 5 hours of quality time equals 10 hours of my time. You can begin to play those games with time and with tenure, and I think this is a very serious question that should be thought of more seriously. As far as I'm concerned, I think that if the biological parents are competent, and at least if one is competent, because I think this is very significant. I would argue right now that the child's biological mother, and in the case coming up, there will be a lot of supporting evidence, is at the present time in remission and competent. But even if she wasn't, I am the custodial parent. I am competent. I do not feel that the law really has the right to kind of intercede into that situation, that I have the right to make certain judgments about my welfare and the welfare of my children. I also believe that this woman also went to my parents, to the children's grandparents, and tried to tell them that they are not eligible to be involved with the child because they are too old. Well, that's just an emotional issue, and there's obviously no legal support for that. But I even wonder what is the meaning of this law. I really don't know what should be done, other than I think first of all we have to look very seriously at competent biological parents, and I think that we perhaps even. I have a lot of problems with putting this issue before a judge. This is, as far as I'm concerned, very complex psychological information, and it almost exists on a case-by-case basis. And I have absolutely nothing against judges, but I do not think most of them are very swift in terms of handling a lot of the subtleties that are involved there. And I'm kind of surprised at a law that, as far as I'm concerned, has been rather irresponsible. I can understand good intent. I can understand that there are step-parents, both fathers and mothers, who have done the brunt of the work, but I still think, what are we going to do with that issue of, is the parent competent? Are they basically loving? And do they have a prerogative that precedes any other person's prerogative? And isn't that a very important judgment that has to be considered? Now I feel if you prove incompetency, then I think we have a tradition of moving into a situation and beginning to talk about the welfare of the children. I don't understand what you mean by the welfare of a child. For example, if you don't want your child to go to the movie and your child wants to go to the movie, are we now supposed to say you are not considering the child's welfare? Now that's an absolutely trivial question, but we also, I think one of the things I've noticed in a lot of these cases is there is an argument about detachment and attachment. And I am not a psychologist, but I do work at a university, and I have been talking to academic psychologists. And when you have attachment, you have detachment. And there is such a thing as detachment depression. But detachment depression does not preclude the fact that you are going to, that the child will go through change, and that that change, it will not be positive. And I don't see that being considered here either.
Let me ask you a question. In looking the bill over as carefully as I can, understand that it would somewhat limit the court's discretion on letting others than the natural parents become involved in either visitation or custody. And I take it from your testimony that these limitations are what your testimony is directed at specifically.
I guess what I'm asking,
and just to try and get a specific response, let me ask it simply. We should, according to the way the bill is stated, take some of that discretion out of the court and make it policy that the court shouldn't let other than natural parents be involved with visitation or potentially custody. Am I correct? Would that be
natural parents would also I would consider grandparents as well.
Let me follow up, Representative Cooley.
Go ahead and follow up. I just want to make some comments.
Okay. When you say grandparents, and I'm just trying to get it down for the record, does that mean that so far as grandparents are concerned, you would want them to have, the court to have discretion to give them visitation rights or not?
I think the grandparents are part of the a very important part of the identity fabric of the child, and I do not think that the natural parents have a right to dismiss them just because they don't get along with them. They can dismiss them maybe if they're an alcoholic and a threat.
Representative Hooley, did you have something you wanted to add?
Just a couple of comments, if I may, Mr. Chair. Oops, excuse me. Watch me fall off the chair. I think the real issue of what happened, I guess, last time and what we're trying to address, and maybe we haven't addressed it correctly in this bill, is the fact is, as a parent, you have you're the one held responsible if you neglect the child. You're the one held responsible to for the health and welfare of the child and to support that child. And yet, with the bill we passed last time, if you have established a loving relationship, and you do have in your packet that was passed out in front of you a letter from a psychologist from West Lane, where she gives some examples of contacts her children had, and any of one of those, under the current law, could go to court and petition to have visitation and custody of that child. I mean, that could be a daycare provider who was fired for abusive behavior if they had contact for more than 3 years. You could have an ex-husband who has a relationship with another woman, and when the kids have visitation with the ex-husband and the woman is there and has a relationship with those children and that goes on, that woman could petition, even though she's not married to the ex-husband. If a single woman had a relationship with another man, which is, you had a relationship with another woman, she could petition the court. If you had a father, an ex-father-in-law who was married to several women and they had a relationship at all with the children, you can sort of carry it to the absurd. And the fact is, the real question is, I think, as a policy is, and it's a tough policy issue, is how much do you let other people intrude into parental rights? And what, what legal obligations do then is incurred by those people. And just let me, if I may, from Karen Carman, who's an MA development of psychology, who there is a letter from you that's it's a typed letter of her handwritten letter. She writes in the last paragraph, "It's amazing to me how many people are unaware of this legislation and its impact on their lives. I've heard from about three or four, however. It is only through a friend that I heard of these hearings. Everyone I've talked to about the existing legislation feels it is intrusive and absurd. There's no publicity to get a general opinion, public opinion. I cannot attend to testify due to the short notice and the necessity to work to feed my children. No one has volunteered to take that over for me. But I would hope that you would read that." And what we've tried to do in this legislation as you go through it, and I'd be happy to go through it section by section, is try to bring it back to the other side where you do have, it's not quite so intrusive.
Representative Bellman, did you have a question of either of the witnesses, Representative Hooley?
Well, as I look at the bill, would the step parent or foster parent have, if they have, they would have had to have substantial continuity for the last, for at least 2 years, and I would guess within the last 2 years before they could petition the court.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the way you would read it?
Right.
I'm wondering, and this may be unfair to ask you, what have you done differently in this bill, Darlene, other than rearrange the wording? The real effect of the language, I guess, is my question. Where would you say the real policy line is?
I think we took out some of the standing and some of the petitions to the court is a real policy issue.
Representative Bellamy, I might just follow up. If in the first and second line of the substance of it, in place of establishing emotional ties, must maintain with some substantial continuity for at least 2 years. Is added, and I think that's more objective and maybe a heavier burden to get into court, and that those are the kinds of things within the bill I think Representative Hooley is speaking to.
It is, and like I said, I don't know if I went far enough. I think the bill last time went way too far. I don't know if we came back far enough the other direction, as a matter of fact, with the language, but it is before the language was, if I may, Representative Bellamy, is if they just have established some kind of emotional tie. It doesn't say for how long, it doesn't say what kind of an emotional tie, it just says if you establish an emotional tie with the child, you may petition for intervention in the court having jurisdiction over the custody, placement, or guardianship of that child. So it may be in a daycare center, and I mean, any kind of relationship you literally can think of, they have a right to come into court and petition that court for visit. Now, they may lose, but the fact is what you're doing in case of Mr. St. John is what somebody that wants to harass you because this law is on the book can simply go do that under current law. And they still may under this law. I don't know if we've gone far enough.
Representative Bellamy, did you have a follow-up?
Yes. I can see the grandparent, I can see the step-parent relative by blood or by marriage. Would this law be unduly restrictive on the foster parent? Are there many foster parents that would have a two-year continuity for at least 2 years?
Representative Bellamy, I mean, it is. I mean, I talked to, as a matter of fact, when this bill was passed, I think that some of the people I was talking to that supported it last time were foster parents, and I suspect some of them had developed great emotional ties in a very short period of time, and I think that's real easy to do with, depending on the age of the children, the emotional tie. And I guess the question is a policy question that comes down to, as you look at who can petition to the court and who has standing, what kind of legal obligations do they have? Where do the legal obligations fall? And as you give more and more people standing in the court to petition, do they have any legal obligations? And because they have no legal obligations, I guess then what rights do they have other than they've developed some emotional tie with a child? Well, a lot of people can develop emotional tie with a child in a very short period of time in a zillion different settings. I don't know if that, I've never yet dealt with that ways of being, so I don't know if that's a real number, but when you can, any situation you can think of. It was real nice. Let me give you an example of several years ago, before I got in this process, I was coaching a nice little 7th and 8th grade basketball team. And I developed some real emotional ties with some of those kids, and I had the wonderful experience of one of them calling me up this past Christmas and saying, can I come down and help for a little while? And I'm now a senior in college and on my way to law school. And so, I guess I could have petitioned the court and said I'd like to have custody of this wonderful person. But the way the law is, I could have done that.
Representative Hooley, I'm trying to remember last session, I do recall that there was a bill that would have mandated, I guess it was grandparents' right, that the judge must grant that right. And I, as I recall, the amendment here was an alternative to leave the court discretion.
Representative Hanlon, I remember. It's ironic because last session we did pass a grandparents' visitation bill that was totally separate from this other bill, and that was passed by the House, and when it got into the Senate, it died in the Senate committee. This bill, I think, came as a totally separate piece of legislation, and I think not sitting on the committee or having testified, but from, I think, the one person that contacted me, a foster parent, I assume that's where it came from, or the problem of, anytime I think you deal with issues like this, there are as many stories on one side as the other side. I really believe that, and I'm not arguing against this bill at all. But I think what we did last time is we say over and over again, parents, you must pay for the child, you must, educate the child. If you neglect the child, you are held liable for that. And yet we turned around and said, hey, anyone, if you've got some emotional tie to a child, you can petition the court for visitation, for custody, and anything else. And I simply think we went too far, and I don't think we addressed that policy issue.
Are there any further questions of Representative Hooley or Mr. St. John? Thank you both for taking the time.
I would be happy to work with the committee or whatever if you want to deal with this issue. I think we need to. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
I have Roger Fite signed up, and I know we have written testimony from Roger on a different bill, not this. Or do we have him on this bill also?
I find a great deal of overlap between these two bills, and while I do have reference to
Mr.
Bill 3197.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I asked the question. Why don't you proceed in testifying on 3025 and identify yourself for the record, please.
Okay, my name is Roger Fite, and if I could, I would like to give this testimony and have it entered in the record pertaining to both bills. Because there's a great deal of overlap.
For the purposes of the record, I ask that this testimony be incorporated in House Bill, what's the other number?
3197.
3197 for the record, and please proceed, and I won't call you back up for that bill then. Okay,
thank you. My wife and I have been foster parents for approximately 8 years. During that period, we've had one child or a sibling.
Could you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Roger Feit.
Okay. It's my job to make sure it's in the record. Go ahead.
During that period, we've had one child or a sibling pair in our home for about 6 years of that period. Most of our involvement has been with children that were in permanent placement and went from our home to an adoptive home. We've cared for a total of 6 foster children during this period. I'm here today because the 7-year-old foster boy who is currently in our home and his 2 sisters, ages 11 and 12, have been badly treated by the system that is intended to protect them. I'm convinced that House Bill 3197 will inflict similar pain and suffering on hundreds of other innocent children. Our 7-year-old is one of 4 siblings. These children were placed in a foster care as a group. After living in that home for 1.5 years, it was deemed necessary to remove the 3 older children from the home.
Roger, we do have your testimony.